Decisions, decisions, decisions. Life is about making many, 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 lots of them, decisions. If you think back over this past week, you think of how many decisions you made. A lot of them may have been small, may have been a little more insignificant. But maybe some of you faced something this past week where it was a major decision. Some kind of a major change that you need to make or you need to do. What we're going to do today is we're going to look at two kings that made decisions. What we're going to do is we're going to look at their decisions and kind of evaluate them. One king is actually a good king. The other king is a bad king. We're going to look at a good king make a bad decision. Do good people make bad decisions? Yes, we do. We all do. But what we want to do is look at this decision-making that they do in this story, hopefully learn a couple of things about where we should go as we start making every decision in our life, and then go from there. At the end, I'm going to, it's not actually in the passage, but we're going to talk about a process for making decisions that someone shared with me a number of years ago. Hopefully it can be helpful to you. Maybe many of you already use this process. And we're going to be doing that. We are in a series, and this series is entitled Becoming God's Leader. And today we're going to talk about a leader's decisions. We're going to be in 2 Kings chapter 3. And in your blue Bibles, it's on page 261. Now you're going to want to open to 2 Kings chapter 3, and we're going to look at one of those interesting stories. How did we get to this point? Well, in the life of Elijah, who we studied for a number of weeks before this, we saw near the end of his life that God brought along Elisha and prepared him for ministry. And actually, over the last 2 weeks, we have been looking at what did God do to prepare somebody to be a leader? Because we all know leaders, and maybe they're quite a few years and experiences along, but what about those first steps? And as we looked at that first story involving Elijah and Elisha, we saw three key principles that will be very helpful for any leader. This was a couple of weeks ago. We looked at the fact that Elisha served Elijah all the way up till the point he was taken away. And we see that every leader needs to be a servant. You don't go up until you go down as a servant. Then we saw Elisha ask Elijah, can I be the next leader? And we talked about that. It's okay to ask to be that, to aspire to that. Maybe it's not the timing right then for you to be the leader, but certainly we looked at that. And then finally, in that chapter, we saw the amazing story where Elisha picked up the mantle of Elijah. He walked to the Jordan River and he smacked the river and the waters parted. And I think that's really one of the keys to every leader. You see, a few minutes earlier, he had seen Elijah do that. But now it was Elisha. He had to act in his own faith. And as a leader, you're going to have your own faith. And I think this separates all kinds of believers. There are believers that love God and they're called to Him, but they never demonstrate faith. It's got to be your faith that is demonstrated. Every leader has to be that way. That was such a powerful message and lesson in terms of understanding that. Last week we saw those two stories, interesting stories about the salt that purified the water. We talked about idolatry. We talked about the fact of what that was talking about is every leader, every person is going to deal with idolatry in their life. As a leader, you need to understand that. And it's going to be different things at different times in your life, but you've got to deal with it and keep putting God first, and it's an ongoing process. Then finally, we saw the story of the bear cubs that came out and mauled 42 ewes. Those poor, innocent children. No, no, no. No, no, no. That was a planned event orchestrated to take Elisha out. And we talked about his message had preceded him, and that message was accepted by some and rejected by others. And this group of 42 had rejected it. There were consequences to that. And what we talked about as we wrapped that up, that the most dangerous thing you can do is resist and reject God's word when it's given. There can be serious consequences in your life when that happens. Okay, some time passes. And we now have in 2 Kings 3 a story where we're going to look at two kings, actually three kings, but two kings. They're going to make some decisions. And as I looked at this, I said, wow, there's decisions here. And a leader's decisions are critical. How should he make those decisions? What shouldn't he do? What should they do? Applies to men and or women. Applies to everybody. So open with me to this story. And let's begin reading chapter 3. Here we go. Moab revolts. Joram, son of Ahab. Now Ahab has died at this point. Became king of Israel in Samaria in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. So in the north you have Ahab. In the south you have Jehoshaphat. And in the nation of Israel they were divided. And he reigned 12 years. Okay, he did evil in the eyes of the Lord, but not as much as his father and mother had done. He got rid of the sacred stone of Baal that his father had made. He'd made some idol, and he got rid of that. Nevertheless, he clung to the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, which had caused Israel to commit. He did not turn away from them. All right, the sins of Jeroboam we looked at the first week we studied Elijah. What Jeroboam said is, you know what? I can't have all the people going from Israel down to Jerusalem to worship in that spot. So I'm going to create other places of worship and it'll be okay. By the way, there's only certain people that can be priests. I don't like that idea, so I'm going to establish priests. Who do you want? Who wants to be a priest? Come on down and I'll set you up. Kind of like online being a minister. Just fill out the paperwork and you're there. It happens. That's what he did. We're still studying the effects of that years later. So he did that, and then he set up all kinds of idols everywhere. Those were the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat. Bad stuff led Israel away from God. He followed in those sins. Now, verse 4. Mesha, king of Moab, raised sheep, and he had to supply the king of Israel with 100,000 lambs and with the wool of 100,000 rams. Okay, so they were captured under the authority of Israel, and instead of destroying them, they had them do this, provide wool and sheep. But after Ahab died, the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. Which makes sense. He's trying to see, man, can I get out of this? 100,000? 100,000? A lot. All right. So, verse 6, at that time, the king of Israel, hang on a second. So, at that time, King Joram set out from Samaria and mobilized all of Israel. So, you've got the northern part of the nation mobilized. He also sent this message to Jehoshaphat. This is good King Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. The king of Moab has rebelled against me. Will you go out with me to fight against Moab? All right? We don't know a lot about the process here. But he says this. I will go with you, he replied. I am as you are. My people as your people. My horses as your horses. So we've got Israel united again facing the Moabites. All right, verse 8. So Jehoshaphat says, by what route shall we attack? He asked. Let's go through the desert of Edom, he answered. Verse 9. So the king of Israel set out with the king of Judah and the king of Edom, so the three of them. After a what? Roundabout march. That might tell you about the direction they're going in. A roundabout march of 7 days, and Moab was right on their border. I have no idea why they went on a roundabout march there, but it was not a good decision. The army had what? No more water for themselves or for the animals with them. All right, so here we have two kings coming together with a third king, but the emphasis is clearly on the king of Israel and the king of Judah. Now, when you look at this, there's not a lot about decisions here, but you will see that there are just decision after decision being made here. Many people question, why in the world would Jehoshaphat do anything with King Joram? I mean, it's an evil king, and we'll find out more about that. Why did he even make that decision? We'll look at that in a moment. Then, why attack through the desert in a roundabout manner? Just go get them. These are the Moabites. You've destroyed them before, and God has told you to do that. Why do they go roundabout through the desert? So after 7 days, just a really bad decision, everybody's out of water. And as we all know, you're not going to go far in that climate without water. All right, so now we have a problem. Let's look at how these people react. All right, verse 10, we're going to get Joram's reaction. What? Exclaimed the king of Israel. Has the Lord called us three together only to hand us over to Moab? Wait a minute, this is all God's fault. He's to blame here. Why do we even follow him? Why do we even care about him? Why do we do this? Interesting, his reaction. He really didn't follow God. That's part of his problem. He did it occasionally when it benefited himself. Verse 11, let's look at the other king's reaction. But Jehoshaphat asked, you know what? Is there no prophet of the Lord here that we may inquire of the Lord through him? Somebody's got to be here that we can go to the Lord and find out what to do. An officer of the king of Israel answered, Elisha, son of Shaphat, is here. He used to pour water on the hands of Elijah. Jehoshaphat said, the word of the Lord is with him. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him. It's interesting the difference. There's a bunch of blame shifting by Joram. Jehoshaphat did something that for a king is very humble. He humbled himself. He said, look, we've blown it. It doesn't say that actually here, but he knows we've blown it. An army without water. What are we going to do? How are we going to attack? What do we do next? He says, let's turn to the Lord. Let's look to him for guidance and for direction. Guys, we've yucked it up. We have messed it up. We got to do something here. It's interesting. Look at Joram. He is hopelessness. Jehoshaphat says, let's have hope in God. Joram is lost. Jehoshaphat said, let's look to God. Joram said, there's no direction here. Jehoshaphat said, let's go find God's man. Let's get out of this mess. All right, so it's kind of an interesting story. We're getting through it here. Now, let's go to your outline. A leader's influence in decisions. Because many times, leaders are going to have more of this than anything else in decisions. That's the truth. There are times that leaders make decisions, yes. But a lot of it has to do with influence. Now, let's talk about this and what they've done. All right, so on your outline, verses 1 to 12, I think, help us with a key principle. And the principle is this. A leader's influence in decisions is that they must, it's coming up here, you must point people to God. You must point people to God. What we see, and we don't have all the facts here, but I'm going to assume some things. With Joram, he says, man, we're going to attack these people. Let's just go do it. And he says, by the way, contact Jehoshaphat, see if he'll do it with us. So they just go and make a decision. And again, even on Jehoshaphat's part, we don't know. But he said, yeah, I'll go with you. I'll do it. And you look at that and you're thinking, why would he do anything with this wicked king? But he did. Maybe there was some pressure there. Maybe it's, you know, maybe we can unite this empire again. You know, maybe we can do some good things. Maybe we can accomplish. Maybe I can bring him back to God, you know. This is one nation. I don't know, but it probably wasn't the best decision to make. All right, so probably as a leader then, you must point people to God. What we see and what we know, and I read quite a bit of other accounts and historians, Josephus just is a historian, and they say nothing about the process of going to God here. It's kind of looking and just making a decision on their own. So let me ask you this, where does God enter into your decision-making process? I'll tell you, life is tough. Lots of decisions. Where does God enter into this? What part does he play? I mean, if we're looking at Joram, it's like, man, let's go attack these people. And he had some good reasons, but let's just go do it. By the way, let's take a lousy route and go through the desert and run out of water in 7 days. Two really bad decisions. The problem with Jehoshaphat is, good king, followed God, but he may have been coerced. He may have been directed and guided by a bad decision by a bad king. Be careful who you talk about with your decision making also. You could have some people around you that may not guide you in the best way. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes too. But the point here, I think, is you got to point people to God. We don't see that here. As far as we know, and as far as I've studied, I could not find evidence to that. Where does God enter in that whole process with you? All right, let's continue on with these young men. Verse 13. Elisha said to the king of Israel, now they have traveled down to where Elisha is, so here's where he enters back into this story. Elisha said to the king of Israel, what do we have to do with each other? Buddy, go to the prophets of your father and the prophets of your mother. He says, what are you doing here? You got your own prophets. You had 450 of them that Elijah killed, but there's a whole lot more of them that have come back again. Go see your own prophets. Why are you coming to seek God? Pretty hard stuff, but it needed to be said. No, the king of Israel answered, because it was the Lord who called us three kings together to hand us over to Moab. It's all about God's fault in doing this. I don't know. I never saw anything that indicated that he ever talked to God about doing this. He just did it, and then God gets the blame. Oh, that happens, doesn't it? We just do things, and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, where's God? Where's God in this? All right, 14. Elisha said, as surely as the Lord Almighty lives, whom I serve, if I did not have respect for the presence of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, I would not look at you or even notice you. It says, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't even talk to you. We wouldn't even be here. You wouldn't even be in my presence. You're only here because of Jehoshaphat. All right. This may seem a little redundant, but this point is really important, and it's this. A leader's influence. You must point people to God first. You must point people to God, was my first point. You must point people to God. Now I'm saying you must point people to God first. What did Jehoshaphat do? He said, let's go find God's man. Let's find him. Let's straighten out this mess that we've gotten into. And in fact, they wouldn't have been in this mess probably if they would have sought God first. You must point people to God first. As a leader at any level, it doesn't matter. You're going to have to help people make decisions. You're going to have to make decisions with people, and you're going to have to make decisions on your own. Point people to God first. Such a simple point, but do we do it? You know what happens? You know what happens? We get lazy. We get proud. We get a little arrogant. Oh, I can handle this. And we try and do it on our own. A lot of times that's what happens. We need to point people to God first and then consistently do that. Seek God first. Think about the decisions you've made. Now, for me to go to Costco and run in and have lunch with Lily and her two daughters that were sitting there eating pizza, and I didn't pray to God and ask him about going to lunch at Costco. I think we can make those decisions, all right? But as you start living life, and there are many other decisions, many, 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 look to God first. It's not enough just to say to point people to God, but to help people go to God first. There's a big difference between going to God here at the beginning of a process as opposed to what we're seeing here halfway through the process going to God. You want to come back and you want to come to God first. Amen? Amen. First. It will save you a lot of grief. Look at the mess they're in. You got an army without water. You got one king that's really messed up. And then you got Jehoshaphat trying to do the right thing. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens as we continue on. Verse 15. But now bring me a harpist. So Elisha is asking for a harpist. While the harpist was playing, the hand of the Lord came upon Elisha, and he said, now, last week I talked to you about military strategy. Look at this one. This is what the Lord says. Make this valley full of ditches. In other words, I want your army to go out there and start plowing furrows and make ditches. This is what the Lord says. You will see neither wind nor rain, yet this valley will be filled with water, and you, your cattle, and your other animals will drink. That would take a whole lot of faith just to go out there and take a pick. All right, Company A, we're going to go over to this side and we're going to start building these little 6-inch, 8-inch furrows. Let's do it. Can you imagine military people doing this? My goodness. They're not digging ditches. But you know what? They did. All right, next verse I think is a key verse to the whole chapter. Verse 18. This is an easy thing in the eyes of the Lord. He will also hand over Moab to you. On your paper there, put 18 and just circle it. This is an easy thing in the eyes of the Lord. See, what is your view of God? How do you view God? Well, God can do some things, but boy, I'll tell you what, when it talks about my major life decisions, God's not big enough to handle those. But that's the logic we use at times. Oh man, we got a big decision here, and nah, God can't handle that one. So I'm going to go ahead and do it on my own. Good luck. And we've all done it, and we've all yucked up. So we look at this story and we think, what a bunch of dummies, and yet we do the same thing. It's a small thing for the Lord to do. It's just an amazing verse here. And just to pull it out and just to remember this verse of the kind of God that we are dealing with. You, verse 19, will overthrow every fortified city and every major town. You will cut down every tree, stop up the springs, ruin every good field with stones. That's what you're to do. And they slept on it. The next morning, about the time for offering the sacrifice, there it was. Water flowing from the direction of Edom, and the land was what? Filled with water. So you wake up and you said, what a waste yesterday was. You wake up and you walk out of your tent, and there it is, all these ditches all through this territory, and they're all filled with water. So you take your horse, they probably had an area for the animals and an area for the humans, and they started drinking. And getting refreshed. Now the other thing is, some other people saw this. The next morning, I'm sorry, verse 21, now all the Moabites had heard that the kings had come to fight against them, so every man, young and old, who could bear arms was called up and stationed on the border. When they got up early in the morning, the sun was shining on the water. To the Moabites across the way, the water looked red like blood. God is at work here, clearly. 23, that's blood, they said. Those kings must have fought and slaughtered each other. Now to the plunder, Moab. But when the Moabites came and to the camp of Israel, the Israelites rose up, fought them until they fled. And the Israelites invaded the land and slaughtered the Moabites. They destroyed the towns, and every man threw a stone on every good field till it was covered. They stopped up all the springs and cut down every good tree, and only Kiriath-Haaretz was left with its stones in place. But men armed with slings surrounded it and attacked it as well. When the king of Moab saw that the battle had gone against him, he took with him 700 swordsmen to break up the kings of Edom, but they failed. Now you're going to see something about the godless idolatry of these kings around this nation of Israel. Then he took his what? Firstborn son, who was to succeed him as king, offered him as a sacrifice on the city wall. What a horrific thing to do. The fury against Israel was great. They withdrew and returned to their own land and continued paying tribute to the nation of Israel. All right. In your decision-making process, you've got to point people to God. You've got to point people to God first. And then the third thing you've got to believe is this. This story demonstrates it, verses 15 through 27. Believe that God is all-powerful. It's a small thing for God to do this. Verse 18. You step out in faith, nation of Israel. Dig these ditches. I'll fill them with water. And by the way, I'll deliver Moab into your hands. You must believe that God is all-powerful. How big is your God? How big is our God? That's why I want verse 18, maybe on your refrigerator, just 2 Kings 3:18. Ask yourself, how big is your God? This is a small thing for God to do. He's interested in the decisions of our lives. He's interested in what you're going through. All right. That's the end of the story. I'm going to go outside the story now for a few minutes and share something with you that was very helpful to me, that was shared about making decisions. All the blanks below that you have are not in this story, but let me just give you a framework for making decisions, and maybe hopefully it can be helpful. Here's what I'm assuming in making decisions. Number one, and this is not on the list yet, you are praying about it. I'm going to assume that. If you're not doing that, what are you doing? You're going to be praying about it and seeking God. That is an understood point. You begin there. Okay, first step is this. In making decisions, don't violate biblical commands. If you are going to do something that is going to break one of the Ten Commandments, it's wrong. Don't do it. Do not break biblical commands. Any one of them that you know. And the Ten Commandments are usually the easiest ones. Someone's asked you to do some kind of work or a job that's going to push you in that direction, don't do it. Bad decision. You're violating one of the biblical commands that says do not lie or do not steal. Don't violate biblical commands. Well, it's such a great offer. It's such a great opportunity. Wrong. If you violate God's commands, you're starting off in the wrong direction and it's going to get worse. You would not believe. I have talked to people about things that they are considering doing, and they've clearly broken one of the Ten Commandments. And I said, but it's breaking one of God's commands. Well, it's such a good thing God will over. No, He won't. Don't break biblical commands. Don't try and rationalize it, justify it. Don't do that. Okay, second thing is this. List the pros and the cons. This is really basic. Well, this is a good idea. If I do this, I can relocate to another location. That would be a good thing. Maybe a better salary. Let's just talk about a job. That might be some pros. On the con side is I've got to find a new church. How important of a decision is that for you when you do something or you move? That should be a very important part of it. List the pros, list the cons. It's amazing how many of us don't do this, but we need to do this. Okay, next. Seek wise counsel. There's a difference between seeking counsel and seeking wise counsel. All right, let me suggest something. When you are about to make a big or a major decision, seek wise counsel. Wise counsel would be two things. One, somebody you respect spiritually. And second would be someone who has done what you're considering doing, has already done what you're considering doing. So you might have wise counsel involved with somebody spiritual that you respect, but then you might have also wise counsel with somebody who has done it and can tell you, did you think about this and that? That's wise counsel. Now, you can talk to friends, and you should, and get input, but you want wise counsel. You don't want everybody to agree with you on something. You want people to be honest with you, and hopefully wise counsel will be wise enough to say, I'm not sure that's a great decision for you. Those are real people that really care about you and that will help you. Wise counsel instead of counsel. Anybody can get counsel and anybody can give you all kinds of stuff. Spiritually is one part of it. Those with experience in that area is another part of it. Seek wise counsel. All right, next, make the decision. At some point you're going to have to do this. Some people just put it off forever and ever and ever. Make the decision. Figure out how you're going to do that. Make the decision. Some people come to this point and stop with everything in their life and never go anywhere because they never make decisions. Okay? Make the decision. Next, live with the consequences. Recognize any decision you make, you're going to have consequences. They can be good.